From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th day of August, 2009, the last day to sign up for the ACRE program for the 2009 crop season. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo. He's at Global Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. And as we close out our half-hour program, Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center that belongs to NOAA, will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures like this for the day. Settlement prices in the wheat pit were a bit higher. September contract at 481 and three quarters, up a quarter. December at 509 and a half, a quarter higher. And the March at 528 and three quarters, up a quarter in the corn pit today. September contract at 319 and a quarter. That was down 5 1/4 cents. December futures at 327 and three quarters, down five and rather down 4 1/4. And the March contract at 341 and a half, down 4 1/2 cents. May futures at 350 and three quarters. A settlement price there down 4 3/4. And July contract 359, down 4 1/2 cents. Soy complex now, August beans, $11.87 1/4 lower. September 1024 and a half, down 40 3/4. November beans at 981 and a half, down 37 1/4. And the January at 988. Settlement price down 1032 and a half. And the March down 35 at 1032. Here's what the rest of the soy complex looked like. August bean meal at 380, down $10.90. August oil down 36 at 37.18. August live cattle futures 84.65, 47 and a half higher. August feeder cattle at $100.70, up 65 cents in the August lean hogs today, 32 and a half cents higher at 49.12 and a half. From the outside markets on this afternoon, September crude oil at 67.51, down 301. Ethanol at $1.55 1/2, a penny lower, and natural gas at $3.24 1/10, down 9 1/2 cents. The RBOB gasoline at $1.93 7/10, that's 8 2/10 lower, that is. And September heating oil futures at $1.84 1/10, up or rather down 6 1/10. Propane futures at 91 8/10 of a cent, 1 7/10, and that is higher on the day. Gold futures at $947 on a settlement price, down $7.70. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 92.68. That's down just about 132 points on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like at this hour. Futures, or rather the weather forecast says today should be mostly sunny. Highs between 84 and 90. Tonight, mostly clear. Lows will range between 59 in the northeastern parts of Indiana to 68 in the Chicago area. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, highs from 87 to 92. The extended outlook says temperatures will continue to increase through the weekend, also increasing the drying and development rates for corn and beans. High temps will reach in the upper 80s and lower 90s through the early part of next week before a cold front brings a chance of widespread precip on Tuesday and Wednesday, and slightly cooler temperatures for the second half of next week. The longer-range computer models are indicating a return of northwesterly flow and cooler-than-average temperatures into the final week of August.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon from Global Analytics office in Lafayette, Indiana. Mike Zuzolo is on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey there, Todd. Happy Friday to you, buddy.
Hey, happy Friday to you. We've got a little bit of extra time to spend with you today. I hope that's okay.
Oh, gosh, yes. Thank you.
I thought it might be, so I thought we might need to talk a bit about beans to begin with. I was looking around, but I didn't see exactly as I walked in late into the studio here what happened. but that's an awfully big drop in the front end, down 87 cents or thereabouts, and the note was followed.
A very good day of giving us an example of how the fundamentals and the technicals can both work together so well, Todd. We had a surprise of 227 contracts of deliveries on the August, with this being the last day. That really surprised the trade. The NOPA crush number came out much lower than the trade expected in estimates and much lower than June. And then we also had the weather come into play, not just here in the United States. We had been talking about a little bit wetter weather going at home on the close yesterday. The outside markets were looking a little bit more vulnerable yesterday. So the beans put in a pretty nasty technical day yesterday, with the September having an outside day. But the weather here in the United States was just half the equation, I think. I think the weather in India is looking to be improving quite a bit this weekend and early next week. And we saw the Malaysian palm oil market and the Southeast Asian veg oil market drop from a 10-week high. It dropped pretty heavily yesterday or last night on the overnight trade. So all of a sudden, the trade started to look at a gap in the November beans. The 50-day moving average was just underneath us. You throw on top of that the dollar and its rebound today and a very strong correction in the S&P and the crude oil market, and I think you just have kind of a perfect storm for why the soybeans, which started off vulnerable or ended the day yesterday vulnerable, just was really set upon as the greatest thing to sell today from the trade perspective.
So November beans, the new crop, down 37 and a quarter. They set their sights on the gap, filled that one, 50-day moving average, and settled below it. What's next?
Well, we've got the gap that we have filled by about a penny. If we do, it was amazing to see the midday weather models change, especially the GFS model. I mean, we were looking at maybe a half an inch to an inch of rain over the course of the next 5 days. Todd, when this model came out, the GFS snapped up to upwards of 3 to 5 inches for places like Peoria, Princeton, northern third of Illinois is looking at 2 to 3, maybe even 5 inches of rain come Monday morning. And then there's more systems following. It's almost as if there is a train effect of rains due to a trough. And so we're looking at 3 to 4 times of chances of rains coming through in the Corn Belt next week, in the Bean Belt next week, into the driest areas. So I think what's next would be, if you can't snap back Sunday on a weather change, you're probably heading towards that 200-day moving average in November, right around the 939 level. There's also some very, very strong trend lines in the November contract just over the $9 level. So somewhere between $9 and $9.40, I think you'll probably find a little bit of buying interest. But it's going to be a tough week to start the week out if these rains come through, because the trade, as the report and the post-report reaction showed us, there was a lot of bullishness factored into the beans, and so we really needed to have dry weather in India and dry weather here in the United States to maintain itself and continue on.
I guess you answered part of my question. I wasn't quite sure that there was that much premium built into the bean market going into this week, but apparently you believe that's the case, and in Chicago, if they dropped it that much, it must have been. I did get a call this morning from somebody up in northern Illinois. He said, hey, why aren't you talking about the dry weather up here?
Yeah, right.
And I was going to do that this afternoon. You're telling me that may end fairly quickly, but of course it all hinges on what the weather does. I've got a secondary question related to that, because oftentimes it's buy the rumor, sell the fact. In this case, it would sort of be the flip side of that.
Correct.
If the rains do come, do you think there could be a pop in the marketplace still?
Well, I think there may be as we get to the end of August. I think there's still a lot of fear by the end users out there that there are going to be very tight supplies of beans. And when I talked to the Chicago guys this week, it was still very much in their rhetoric that they didn't know how good the Delta was going to be. And so I think it's a timing issue. If the rains come through, probably the most amount of pressure that the beans are going to be faced with is between now and the end of August. As we flip the calendar and we get into the crucial pod fill and the early crop beans, I think that's where maybe there's a chance here to come back in and defend some earlier sales or to get long in the beans for a 30 to 45 day window. The beans are nowhere out of the clear of all their dangers in terms of their growth, and I think that's where we've got to keep in mind there's some very short beans out there. And you bring up northern Illinois, and northern Indiana is the same way. I've had calls all week long like you of, hey, we're firing up here. Hey, we're losing 5 bushels a day on our corn. Not so much talking about the beans, but still talking about the corn. So I think that's where, to me, And I put this in copy last night. I really feel like this is the biggest weather weekend that we've had all season.
Well, let's get back to the corn in just a bit. I want one more follow-up on the soybeans before we go ahead and go. When USDA released its crop production numbers and the WASDE figures on Wednesday of this week, of course, it had a range on price. It did raise it a dime, but the price of beans, at least until today, had been above that range. Or on the top end of that range. Do you believe their range, which I think is 840 to 1040, 940 being the average cash sales for the coming year?
Right.
And if so, are you willing to make new crop sales at this point still?
Well, I did some catch up with the clients earlier this past week and late last week, either in the format of getting some November bean puts bought or getting up to the 35 bushel sold level when we were at that 1060, 1050 level. So I'm not going to make any additional hedge recommendations at this point,
right,
mainly because I don't think the crop is made yet and I don't want to get anybody into trouble. As far as the price goes, I'm in a dilemma right now, Todd, because that average price of 840 to 1040 is well above my average price of 765 for 09 beans, because I'm carrying 100 million bushel bigger carryover than the USDA because I don't think the demand's going to be as good as they say it's going to be, just because we're not going to come out of the economic problems as fast as they're assuming we are.
I'm more
wrong than they are right now, though, and we can see that because of how strong the Chinese buying has been and how strong the weekly exports have been.
Right, so you're at 310. Then I did talk on Agronomy Day, which was yesterday here on campus, to a crop consultant who comes up from Brazil. He suggested to me that Brazil may have as many as 6% more acres this year in beans, and that the Argentine farmers, because of the drought and problems with corn last year, will probably put more beans in the ground too.
I think that's very believable, not just from a price standpoint and the Nov bean Dees corn ratio and the July 2010 bean corn ratio, but it's also from a standpoint of El Nino. I don't take a lot of stock in the northern hemisphere with El Nino, but when you start talking about El Nino in the southern hemisphere, it usually coordinates with a much better scenario for planting and producing in Brazil and Argentina, and I think their weather's starting to shake loose here and rains are becoming more normal down there. So I think that makes a lot of sense, that as the rains come and as the weather and the ground gets healed up here from their drought in Argentina especially, you will see them gain more confidence in planting more beans. And the price is right. The crop inputs are still a little bit too high for those folks, especially given the exchange rate. So I would not at all disagree with that 5 to 6% more for Brazilian production, and that's where we've got a window of opportunity to hold on to quite a bit of premium here in beans, especially if we miss some weather here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. I've pulled all my clients the last week and asked them where they were in their beans in terms of maturity, and almost all of them are in the flowering stage right now or just getting ready to flower. So this next 2 weeks is really, really crucial.
Turn your attention now to the corn market. Boy, it performed well and admirably, I suppose, in the face of such an onslaught in the bean pit, didn't it?
Yeah, the only thing that was noteworthy from a technical standpoint for the corn is that it didn't make a new weekly low with wheat and beans, so that was very nice to see. Again, I think that spread was a big feature today, where people, before the report, for the last 2 to 3 weeks, they've been buying beans and selling corn. I think since before the report, maybe Monday, they started to unwind that, and then they kind of stopped on Tuesday and Wednesday. They resumed it, though, after the report, and they really did it in a big fashion here. It seems like what the fundamentals would say is that if we get the rains, it's going to help the beans the most. And I think Chicago believes that a lot. I think, personally, I think that Chicago people think that the crop in corn is already made. I think they're probably still a little bit wrong on that and way, way far from that being the case. But I do think they think that the more rain we get, the more bearish they can press the beans, the more they can unwind that spread. So it naturally gives lift to the corn. The other thing that helped the corn this week was the wheat did hold its weekly support line. Technically, the December stayed above $5, which is just absolutely crucial at this point, especially with another big increase in supplies on the report this week.
From the report, any of those numbers catch your eye? Did you find anything that really seemed out of place to you?
It didn't seem out of place to me, but it was very nice to see is that I was way, way off on the acres and therefore way, way off on the production for corn, but the demand numbers shot up in exports and in FSI, and I think a lot of the other analysts and a lot of the people in Chicago, did not expect the demand to really be pumped up in corn on the weekly report.
It was 350 million bushel.
A massive amount, and I think that's where, if anything's going to turn the corn, you know, I've always been of the mindset that if you have strong demand in the USDA report, it may not shoot the market higher, but it sure brings a floor underneath prices, and so far since the report's been out, that has been the case. So I think that was the most surprising thing to the trade, and I was very glad to see it because we need it if we're going to grow 160 bushel yield.
Did your farmers out west believe 185 in Iowa?
Yes, and it's funny because it was amazing. The western Corn Belt people that I deal with had no problems whatsoever with the corn yield, the national yield or the western Corn Belt yields, except maybe the Nebraska people. They're a little bit skittish because their dry land has been burnt up a little bit. But it's funny, you cross the east of the Mississippi, and I got many phone calls from people that were not on board with that yield figure at all.
Yeah, I checked with Joe Persaki, had a conversation with him this morning about the ear populations, because they jumped up nearly 1,000 this year.
Yes.
Ear weight was heavy. They don't release state-by-state ear population, though he gave me some idea of where things had changed and where they hadn't. Illinois and Indiana was the same, but Minnesota, Nebraska, and Iowa, he said, were all higher than they were last year on ear population. We'll get those populations in September, and we'll also get plant populations at that time.
I think September is going to be a crucial report because on their lockup that they released, the PDF file they released to people, they did say on the administrative data for planted acres, very preliminary, and I think that means a lot, and I think the harvested acres are still very, very important for the September report. So I'm not throwing in the towel here that we may not see harvested acres and corn drop a little bit more.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Just have a great weekend, sir.
Hey, you too, and I'll see you this afternoon. Did you remember that?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Well, I'll talk to you as soon as I get done, and we'll see what we can do, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks much,
yep,
Mike.
Bye.
Mike Zouzalos with Global Analytics. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on this Friday afternoon. It is the 14th day of August, and if you haven't signed up for Acre Program yet, you have an opportunity still. You can do that yet today until the end of the afternoon or the close of the FSA office. And at that point, you can also still sign up for the direct and countercyclical payment if you haven't been in to sign up for it. One way or the other, you need to make sure that one of those two things is done if you're going to be in the farm program.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Our guest this week on Commodity Week, it's our weekend look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural markets, is Top Thirds Mark Gold. We'll record that program this afternoon at about 4:30 and then post it to our website at willag.org. That's willag.org by about 6 o'clock. Mark Gold from Top Third on Commodity Week this week. You can hear it on this radio station or on our website at willag.org. Now, up next, did you know that this year farmers in the Midwest are growing a new variety of soybeans developed right here on this campus and that it tolerates soybean aphids better than the average plant? I'll have more in a moment. The soybean aphid came to the U.S. in the summer of 2000. It's the same year U of I researchers began looking for a variety of soybean resistant to the new pest. Dowling and Jackson were the first two resistant varieties to be identified, says USDA plant pathologist Glenn Hartman.
And hopefully we'll find some more. We've got another 30 or 40 on the shelf that we're kind of wanting to screen through.
Hartman works for USDA and is stationed at the University of Illinois. The nation's soybean germplasm collection is housed on the Urbana-Champaign campus. There are some 18,000 different accessions in the collection. Hartman combed through 4,000 to 5,000 to find the aphid resistance in Dowling and Jackson. He says he knew they were resistant, but that his U of I colleague Brian Deers, a soybean breeder, had to do some crossings and look at the inheritance patterns to figure out whether the resistance was because of a single gene or multiple genes. Fortunately, it comes from a single gene, and that's easier to breed into existing soybean lines. With additional screening, a third soybean resistant to aphids was found, a Japanese variety known as PI200538. Now, Hartman says after the genes from these sources were identified, it was discovered that Jackson and Dowling had genes mapping to the same place on a chromosome, and the PI had a gene mapping to a different place. This means Jackson and Dowling likely have the same resistance gene, and PI200538 has a different gene. That's good for the breeding program. Because Jackson and Dowling originated in the southern United States, they couldn't be grown in the Midwest, well, at least for production purposes. Deers used traditional breeding techniques together with marker-assisted selection to quickly breed the resistance genes into varieties that are already adapted to the Midwest. This year is a milestone year because one of those varieties is being commercially produced. It carries the resistance gene from Dowling. It's the first commercial production of an aphid-resistant variety in the Midwest. The U of I aphid-resistant germplasm and marker technology is licensed to private seed companies who are using it to breed their own varieties. The first aphid-resistant variety developed and released by the University of Illinois is Roundup Ready, and the second is a conventional non-Roundup Ready variety. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Rob O'Malley in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the line with us today to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash grain market is Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Companies. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Didn't leave a lot of time for you this afternoon, so give me a quick overview and your numbers, please.
Quick overview is nearby soybean basis really hit a wall with some unexpected bean deliveries on the August contract. So that led August futures lower. Processor basis across the Midwest was down hard, some as much as 40 or 45 cents on the nearbys. We're 317 on nearby corn and 1069 on the soybeans.
Oh, you're dead on the money. Thanks so much.
Okay.
And that's Bruce Bostert. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon. You can always hear it again if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.
It's International Left-Handers Day, where southpaws celebrate the right to be left-handed. In 1867, a Secretary of Agriculture report listed various farm implements, including left-handed plows. The report said that left-handed plows were in common use and that some farmers insisted the left-handed version was superior because they could commence plowing in the middle of a field, turning all the furrows inward. On this day in agricultural history in 1872, Richard Willstatter was born. He won the 1915 Nobel Prize for Chemistry for his study of the structure of chlorophyll and other plant pigments. In 1902, Felix Wankel was born. A German engineer, he invented the first rotary internal combustion engine. Instead of moving pistons, the Wankel engine uses an orbiting rotor shaped as a curved equilateral triangle. The engine has fewer moving parts than its piston cousin, and it's also lighter and takes up less space. And in 1913, the first true stainless steel was cast in Sheffield, England. The steel alloy contained almost 13% chromium and 0.25% carbon. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On this Friday afternoon, Steve Hilberg is with us. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It belongs, of course, to NOAA. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Lots of questions today about what the forecast is going to look like next week, and especially in the northern parts of Illinois and Indiana. Is the wet weather coming? Is it not coming? There are concerns about dry weather, and then I would think with the changes, maybe concerns about flooding, too. What do you see?
Probably. Question. Good. Probably yes to all of that. It does look like we are in for a wet week next week. The trend has sort of been that way, and the latest models are indicating that the next front to come through is really not going to get too far south, and we're just going to leave a boundary through Illinois that's going to be the focus for showers and thunderstorms, it looks like, almost throughout the entire week. And the potential for the heaviest rain, as you alluded to, is going to be northern Illinois and Indiana. On one hand, that's not such a bad thing. A lot of rain would be bad, of course, but it's been very dry up in the northeastern and northern part of the state for the last 3 to 4 weeks, or maybe even longer, even though other parts of Illinois, central and south, have gotten some pretty good rains, and even northwestern Illinois, the northeast has been very dry. And so they really could use the rain, and actually everybody can probably use a good widespread rain here in August. We're running a little behind where we should be by this time of the month. We've had some rain, but not that much. But it looks like we probably will get caught up this week.
And put your climatologist hat on for me. Talk about the growing season, how far we are behind in growing degree days across the Midwest. Who's the farthest behind, and is there a chance to pick up any of those heat units over the next several weeks?
Well, I was looking at that, and it's very interesting. Southern Illinois, about the southern quarter of the state, is actually pretty close to normal. They're running a little bit behind, about 50 corn-growing degree days behind normal or so. But there's a huge gradient from north, from south to north, and northern parts of Illinois are from 250 to 300 degree days behind since May 1st. Now, this is counting since May 1st, which is when probably a pretty good estimation of planting date. The likelihood of making those up is probably not very good. That's a lot of degree days to make up, and even with consistently warm weather, it's going to have to be much warmer than normal to pick up degree days and make up ground, as opposed to just keeping up with where we should be. So I think that central and southern Illinois have a good chance of catching up. Northern Illinois less likely because they're so far behind right now.
Any years in the past that seem similar to this?
Well, I can't remember. I mean, we did send a record cold July, so that sort of sets the standard right there.
Right.
I can't remember anything quite this cool where we had the combination of this extensive cool weather and combined with late planting and all the problems we had getting the crop in the ground. So this will be it'll be an interesting year to watch.
And finally, a quick look at the weekend. What are we going to do?
We're going to be warm and humid. It looks like rain will probably hold off in much of Illinois and Indiana until Sunday night, but it's going to be the summer weather everybody's been hoping for.
All right. Thanks much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg, he's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. It does, of course, belong to NOAA. You have a good weekend, and remember to tune in for our Commodity Week program. Our guest this week is Mark Gold from Top Third. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.